Okay, folks, I think everybody has got their beers and stuff now, so we can get underway again. Just before we get started, I've been asked to remind everybody that memberships of BristolCon go up in price at the end of the month. So if you haven't got your membership yet, throw money at Joe. Because it'll... Well, yes. Throw money at Joe anyway, but particularly if you want to save yourself £5 on your BristolCon membership, then throw money at Joe straight away. So we're going to do another four readings now, and we're going to open up with Mr. Tom Parker.
The Shell. I used to have two brothers. Now I only have one. I'm the only one who remembers what happened. They were both older. Peter was 12, Robert had just turned 10, and I was 6 and a half. We'd gone to the seaside for a family holiday. It was August. It was warm but overcast. Nothing remarkable at all. My brothers were both strong swimmers and soon were rushing off into the sea and diving through the waves. I wasn't so confident, though, and despite having swimming lessons, my parents didn't want me in the sea without armbands. Knowing the onslaught of teasing I would receive from my brothers, I resorted to exploring the rock pools instead. It was there where I first saw the shell. It was about the size of my fist, and I reached into the pool and grabbed it instinctively. It was a treasure, something precious that I needed to possess. It was hard and smooth, and when I turned it over, I saw the underside was pure white. It had a long, thin, serrated opening along the edge, which looked a bit like a mouth.
Eee!
It screeched at me. I dropped it in shock. There was a small plop as it fell back in the pool. I stared in amazement as a small stream of bubbles flowed out of the shell and onto the surface. I was terrified, but I couldn't run away. I was rooted to the spot and fascinated by this turn of events. Thoughts raced through my mind. This wasn't an ordinary shell, that much I knew, but would my parents know what to do? What if this was a magic shell? Or an alien? What if it grants wishes? The screeching stopped and the stream of bubbles began to slow down. Nervously, I reached in and picked up the shell again. It felt exactly the same, but for some reason, fear took hold and I tossed it onto the sand and backed away. I'm not sure what I expected to happen. Maybe some tentacles or claws or spidery legs would come out and try and grab me. Whatever it was, it made my skin crawl. I stared at it, uncertain what to do next. Suddenly, a spurt of water came out, then another. It was as if it was coughing. I won't lie, a little spurt of water came out of me too, but I was 6 and I doubt your bladders would hold under similar circumstances. Help! A faint voice cried out. Help me! Hello? I said. I'm so lonely, the shell said. Will you be my friend? I looked around to make sure the voice couldn't be coming from anywhere else. I could see my brothers were still swimming and my parents were about 50 yards away setting up a picnic. Okay, I said. I'll be your friend. I wasn't sure what sort of friendship I'd have with the talking shell, but I was open to new experiences. Join me, the shell said. Join me in the shell. Now I was frightened. I didn't understand what was going on, but I knew this was dangerous. It's so lonely in here, the shell continued. Won't you come in and join me? I was about to say no when my parents called out that it was time for lunch. Looking back, it's easy to say I should have just gone to them and left the shell behind. I obsess about that moment to this day, because I didn't. I picked up the shell and took it with me. I thought I was being smart, show the shell to my parents and they would tell me what to do, but it was the stupidest thing I've done. If only I knew then what I know now. So I went to my parents and I showed them the shell, but of course the shell didn't say anything. My mother just thought I was playing a game and my father just wanted me to stop putting a shell in his face. It was only my brother Peter who seemed to listen. After lunch, my mother and my other brother Rob went to walk the dog whilst my dad, Peter and I cleared away the picnic. Once everything was clear, my father took a nap, which left Peter and I to examine the shell. Peter thought it would be a good idea to return to the rock pools, as he thought they might give the shell power or something. But we were only halfway there when it started talking again. Hello, it said. Will you be my friend? Who are you? Asked Peter. I don't have a name, the shell replied. Will you give me a name? All right, said Peter, and he thought for a moment. I'll call you Shelley. My name is Shelley, said the shell. What's your name? I'm Peter. Will you be my friend, Peter? Of course, Shelley, he said with a grin. He looked at me in excitement, as if we were playing a marvellous game. The voice in the shell became slightly higher, as if it was excited too. Will you join me, Peter? Join me in the shell? Peter looked at me and gave me a wink. Yes, replied Peter. Yes, I will. The next moment is the one that haunts me. The moment he turned to me, half laughing, half excited at what would happen next. It's so vivid in my mind because he suddenly became frozen like a picture. It was as if I was watching a TV show and the episode just ended. He was stuck in that half-blended expression when the wind caught up and he disintegrated into tiny pieces of sand. They blew around me and stung my skin as they formed a whirlwind. I watched as they were sucked all the way down into the shell through the serrated, mouth-like opening. It's probably my imagination and a memory distorted over time, but when I think back to those moments after Peter disappeared, I swear that the shell's mouth was smiling just a little more than usual.
If we're lucky, we might get to hear the end of that in a little while. Next up, Richard, would you like to come and introduce yourself?
Sorry, I've got a question. I've got friends in my country who would like to listen to this via Skype. Is it okay? Does anyone have any objection?
Sure, that's fine. Though you can tell them we'll be podcasting it eventually.
Yeah, I know, but I just couldn't be bothered to find
it. Yeah, go ahead.
Hello,
Poland.
Yeah.
This Bristol conference is now streaming live over Skype to Poland. No pressure, Richard.
Thanks, Lord.
He's changed his mind.
I'm all right, here they are. So, yeah, basically.
Hello, Poland.
These are my friends, Luke and Annie, and they basically are going to listen to us, so I hope that this is going to be fun for you as much as for them. So, there we go.
You're doing it, Richard Nimble, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't be scared of
the menus in the way. Yeah, they're hiding behind a menu now.
Is there? Yeah.
As long as they don't say, do we want to be their friend?
Yeah, we don't want to be their friend. That'll make me worry.
Oh, I just can't.
Join us inside the phone.
Yeah.
You might have to just sit there and hold it.
Hello everyone, I'm Richard Bendel. Thanks for really prolonging my agony, Freight Cord. That's much appreciated. This is going to be quite a quick one, so I probably won't hit the 5-minute timer, but I'm just going to carry on, finish, and hide in the corner. Right. Cracking the door a sliver, Yarolf peered out from his stout wooden hut and raised an eyebrow. He was used to travellers passing by, but he was curious what kind of imbecile would brave a blizzard to knock on his door. "Ho there," the cry came again. Shaking his head, he opened the door wide and stepped back from the cold wind that bit through his heavy tunic with ease. "Season's greeting to you, traveller," he said as the newcomer entered and tramped the snow from his boots. "I'm Yarolf. What brings you to these dangerous mountains in Hamatri's harshest weather?" The stranger's scabbard thudded against the wall as he fumbled with his thick fur hood. He tugged it down to reveal a severe face with fair hair and a beard that matched his rugged look. "I'm on a journey for knowledge, and I saw the smoke from your fire." His deep voice rumbled around the small cabin. "My knowledge probably isn't the type you're looking for, but I can certainly offer you advice," Yarolf said. The fur-clad man wrinkled his nose. "Where would I ask a crazy hermit for knowledge? You just tell me to count the rocks or look for answers within myself. No, all I need from you is food." Yarolf's eyes narrowed at the presumptions and arrogance displayed by his visitor. It wasn't worth getting into a fight over, so he just let it go. "I've very little food left as I'm due to get supplies when it's safer outside, but I suppose I can spare some salted mutton." The stranger snorted. "I wanted real food. What kind of hermit hasn't got stores of food anyway? I thought you were supposed to be wise." "I'm wise enough to know that you should be polite to strangers." A row of undamaged teeth shone through the visitor's beard as he grinned. "That's the kind of obvious platitude I expected. I don't think there's anything I need to learn from someone stupid enough to live out here on his own and too cowardly to face one of Hamatri's blizzards for supplies. I'll let myself out." The elf opened his mouth to say something, but the intruder interrupted before he could get a sound out. "Oh, and don't try and warn me about the dragons either. I know they've been extinct for years." With a barking laugh, he pulled his hood back up and exited the hut, leaving the door ajar. Closing it again, the elf could hear the man muttering to himself that real hermits have beards. He sat down by the warm stove and thought about the conversation. After careful consideration, he decided that he hadn't been unfair and didn't feel guilty at all. It was true. You should always be nice to strangers.
A piercing scream came from outside, then disappeared into abrupt silence. Yarov smiled to himself. You never know when a stranger will be a tracker that can warn you several yetis are roaming nearby.
Alrighty, thank you very much. Hopefully you're getting that in Poland, are we? Yeah? Good. Thank you. Yes, a little nod from over the phone in Poland. Alrighty. A gentleman with an interesting pen name. You like to come and do your bit? And introduce yourself and whatever.
I'll do the whatever. Interesting pen name is Ugel, which is a basically a demigod from planet Glob who accidentally arrived on Earth at a festival and found that his travel ship, his pod, was actually stolen by a merchant banker who had a VIP pass at the festival, and it went off into space. So he's basically looking for a way off Earth. And so he thought he ought to tell his story. Well, several stories, in fact. Myths and legends of planet Glob. And the first one is Armchair Hero, a bit of a DIY sort of operation here. But I'll start nearly at the beginning. right. A violent stench escaped screaming from the kitchens of Castle Gloom. Making a break for freedom, it smashed into walls and curled fixtures and fittings as it ran riot along the maze of dark corridors. Formed from the pungent odours of decomposing carcasses and a variety of putrefying vegetables boiled in rusty cauldrons, it brawled with everything in whiffing distance. Two dark-cloaked figures stopped and sniffed with tingling nostrils as a putrid stench howled past them, bouncing off the dripping walls.
"Stop salivating like that. He doesn't like it, you know. Disturbs him to the marrow. You dribbling like that. Sorry, it's just the dinner smells so good. Bad. Sorry, yes, bad, 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 bad. And stop saying sorry. Sorry?"
The bulk warlock of Merc sighed. It would not be long before the body of this new apprentice was fed to the gloops that terrorized the castle moat. The warlock shivered and the slime on his tail felt almost tepid at the thought.
"You may be new here, but as Bulk the Warlock, I can't have an apprentice who is ignorant of Merc speak. Glob speak is a serious offence. It is not good for my image. Got that?"
The apprentice's knobbly head shook so hard its three eyes jangled against each other on their antennae.
"Yes, yes, 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 yes. Or should that be no, no, no? It's yes. Haven't you read the Bulk book yet?"
There was an embarrassed silence, only tempered by the squelching sound of their feet as they progressed towards the dark double doors at the end of the passage.
"Can't read," snivelled the apprentice sorcerer apologetically.
The Bulk warlock, hooded reptilian eyes blinked under the pungent light of the burning rush braziers. His tongue darted in and out of the lipless mouth as he pondered on the sorcerer's career path.
"How did you read the future, then?" "It's a gift. Mom said it was from the great Draki..."
"Shh," the warlock interrupted quickly.
"Don't mention his name out loud. If a troll hears you, it's an instant shredding."
"Sorry?"
"And don't say sorry."
"Sorry." The bulk warlock sighed again. His apprentice was destined not to last another two changes of the skin. It was a shame. Somewhere behind the stupid expression and the jangling eyes was a real talent for reading the giblets of all kinds of sacrificial animals. They stopped in front of the doors of the great hall, decorated in overexcited high Gothic carved embellishments. As the warlock pulled the bell rope next to a grill in the gargantuan doors, he admired the sorcerer's slime trail. At least that was a good sign, he thought.
"Bog off,"
bellowed the purple-mouthed giant troll through the rusty grill.
The bulk warlock and the scruffiest, the sorcerer, to see his disgusting darkness, Lord of Merc.
"Right-o," said the troll. "You better come in, then."
The locks jangled and the bolts snapped, After an excruciating squeal of hinges, a small section of the massive door opened as a cat flap, hidden amongst an extravagantly demonic carved panel.
Mind your hat, wizard,
the troll remarked casually as the most powerful magician in Merc and his assistant crawled through the opening.
It's Warlock! And one more bit of lip like that and yours will be sprouting a bunch of pansies, snapped the bulk Warlock.
Can't you take a joke?
The troll mumbled into his scraggy beard.
Dark Lord is just dispensing a bit of injustice. It won't take long. Never does. Might as well go up and see the action, the troll said.
The sound of creaking leather and clinking chains of the troll's uniform accompanied the slithering of the masters of the bulk arts as they marched up between the slime-stained bombastic arches. The colonnade of pillars halted abruptly and opened out into a vast expanse of dripping blue stone. Through the dank spectral mist that dribbled through the slit windows high in the walls, controlled to keep the hall at the correct level of mouldering dampness, the warlock and the sorcerer apprentice adjusted their eyes to the dim blue light. Hidden in the shadows, they waited as the kitchen devil, presumed guilty of cleaning a pot, tried to mitigate its crime in a flood of squeaky whines. A stony silence bore down on the prostrate figure, weighed down in manacles and heavy chain links, its pointy ears and bony membrane wings laid flat in submission.
Thank you very much. Yes, we appear to have lost the connection to Poland. That was probably one of the trolls that did that, but never mind.
Okay.
Yeah. See if you can get them back and ask them if they're going to PeerCon in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay.
Alrighty. Next up, Jack, would you like to come and do yours?
This is an extract from something I'm currently working on. Not quite sure how long it's going to be, but... I'd forgotten about the smell. Every time they returned to the city, she'd said that. Every damn time, and Dagger was sick of it. Sick of it, sick of her, sick of the city, sick of fetching and carrying and teaching wretched little scumbag children and rubbing the master's hairy back and sick of being a slave. Vanya Royce of Arteloy wasn't a bad mistress, she had to admit, but the fact she was a mistress at all was the problem. It would have been a fine life for those born to servitude, she supposed, but she remembered all too well her life of, well, not luxury, but certainly not squalor before the war. There wasn't a proper sewer in Arteloy yet, but the city was still a majestic sight. Low marble buildings were spread out spaciously within the high white walls under the Temple Hill. The amphitheatre and the square of the polis flanked the wide harbour, and the sun beat down on the traders and the bustle and the smoke of the Smith Quarter floated gently over it all. Back in her castroy, Dagger lived in a comfortable farmhouse outside the walls with her father and her brothers. Back in her castroy, she'd eaten meat at least once a week and stuffed her pillows with chicken feathers. Back in her castroy, her father had found her a handsome young man she was going to marry. Dagger realised she'd drifted off into nostalgia again, and that never did her any good. War had come, her father and brothers had marched away and never marched back, and she and a thousand others like her had been given to the Artelesians. War was hard, and surrender was harder. Gods above, it stinks like a dwarf den. Vanya never seemed to open her mouth unless she was going to complain about something, but she wasn't wrong about that. For as long as anyone could remember, they'd been trying to build a proper sewer, and until now they'd never managed to get the votes. It was finally started a year ago, with the new slaves taken from the defeat of a castroid. It was written into the Treaty of Surrender, and it was a done deal, and Dagger was glad of that despite herself. Yet even now the rumbling had begun amongst the Demos of Arteloy. Even now that the tunnels were being dug, there were men casting votes to simply keep the slaves in their homes and enjoy the spoils of war. Such short-sightedness was driven by those who hired out their slaves to collect the night soil, by those who fished the harbour, by those who tanned hides, and the hundreds of voting citizens who would stand to lose, and it was well known that they would eventually win the majority of the Demos to their cause. In response, those in charge of the digging had picked up the pace, which meant the huge numbers of slaves digging day and night had been worked even harder, though they were already worked to exhaustion, which meant more slaves had run, and often murdered their owners first, which meant the punishment of slaves was now death for even relatively minor infractions. Vanya didn't seem to like the new way of doing things, but she went along with it rather than face the social consequences of going against the grain. Mistress, should I fetch some incense on the way? Dagger looked up at her on her beautiful grey horse, watched her suck her teeth and gaze into the distance. She wanted to grab her, to pull her off her bloody great mount and scream at her to answer the damn question, but hurrying along would have meant a blow to the face. She carried on walking beside her instead, watching the landscape change to outlying farms and the shacks of the poor. Yes, that might be best. Perhaps a gift for my husband as well. An excellent idea, mistress. A new drinking cup? Yes, yes, here. She reached into her saddlebag and pulled out a handful of coins. 5 silver heads should be more than enough. She counted them out with exaggerated delicacy, placing each one in her hand as if it were a pristine flower and Dagger was entrusted with its care. Bring back the change. Go to the bathhouse while you're at it as well. You're filthy. She wanted to jump with joy, to cry out her thanks to the gods and the wanderers, but that would not have gone down well. She trudged on and kept her voice level. Yes, mistress. The way to the market was packed with sailors and citizens and slaves with jangling bracelets, 100 different languages and braying and bleating animals. The noise was tremendous, almost overwhelming after the last 2 months of serene countryside at Vanya's estate, but Dagger almost loved it anyway. For a time she could walk the streets and not be constantly expecting some order to be barked or whined at her at any moment. She could forget the misery of her life and fantasize about freedom, dream about the long summer days she should have been spending with the kind husband and children she could never have or she was bound to the House of Royce. She should have been living off the land and helping feed the animals and sacrificing her share to the harvest god. She stopped dead. The smell of Artaloy had been bad, worse than she remembered, but she'd put that down to the vagaries of memory. She knew the situation for the slaves of the Artalesians had gotten worse. She expected crueler treatment, some corpses. She had not expected piles of bodies rotting in the square. She bit back a scream to a pitiful whimper and carried on walking, eyes down, sliding on a muddy patch and avoiding meeting anybody else's gaze. The bodies were naked men and women, tortured and dumped in humiliating piles in the square of the Demos. There were flies buzzing everywhere and people hurrying past, fearful of the ill humours that might be lingering in the fetid air. She stumbled, wretched as she held the gaze of a bloated, blackened, unrecognisable face staring out at her from a nearby mound. She choked back her terror and carried on walking, ignoring the children rushing around her, prodding at the corpses with sticks as if to prove they were unafraid of death. She stopped again, staring at her foot and the stain on it, much more red than mud should be. She felt sick, but not as sick as when she realised her purse had been cut from her belt. It felt like she'd stood stock still for an age. Oh, cool.
Alrighty, thank you very much there, Jack. It's time now for another quick drink and toilet break, and then when we come back, it will be Justin and me, and possibly something in Polish, or even translated into English.